Lecture 18, Etruscan Sports and Spectacles.
You're going to have to trust me on this one. You might have trouble believing it, but there was a time when sports meant more than it does today. I should say even more than it does today. The Super Bowl has an audience of more than 100 million, and the World Cup final is viewed by over 700 million people. So you'd think we'd reached peak sportiness. Not even close. There's some key differences between sport and spectacle today and that in the world of the ancient Etruscans. Here's the first. In their world, it simply mattered more. Now, people today sometimes say they live or die with their particular team. But in ancient Italy, there was actual living and dying taking place in a variety of popular sports and spectacles of the time. We'll get to the details of those in a minute. Second, what was celebrated in sports differed between then and now. While lots of us play sports, and even more watch, most fans support their local teams and players. If the Minnesota Vikings and the Green Bay Packers swapped their entire rosters, very few Packers fans would trade their green jerseys for the Vikings' purple ones. We follow teams based on geographical distinction. But ask 20 people who won a gold medal for fencing at the Olympics, and I'd wager you'll get 20 blank stares and probably a seat to yourself on the bus. In antiquity, by comparison, fans typically celebrated individual athletes more than they did sporting teams. And that's not the only difference. Finally, when it comes to differences, we can't discount context. Today, most major sporting events are held in designated spaces designed just for that sport, whether a football stadium, a hockey rink, or a basketball arena. And you might think that was the same for the Etruscans, particularly given the Roman example of circuses for chariot racing and amphitheaters like the Colosseum for a range of spectacles. But Etruscan sports and spectacles were all performed and presented in the context of religious rituals. So, whether the games were carried out in a rural sanctuary or an urban center, and whether that was in front of a temple or at an acropolis before a tomb, the setting was dictated first by the religious needs and only secondarily by the type of sport or spectacle. Archaeologists have discovered several Etruscan tombs, each with a small courtyard in front, bordered on several sides by steps designed to serve as seats to accommodate spectators for sports, such as boxing and wrestling, performed in front of the tomb. An excellent example of the setting for Etruscan sports is seen on a wall painting from about 500 BC in what's called the Tomb of the Bigai, that is, two horse chariots, from the Etruscan city of Tarquinia, one of the southernmost of the old Etruscan cities. It's about 60 miles north of Rome. On the left hand of the chariot racing scene, the artist has painted the viewing stands. They consist of a wooden set of bleachers, notably with an awning, a favorite amenity that matches the description of the Circus Maximus in Rome at the time of the Etruscan king Tarquin the Elder. On the bench seat are seven spectators, four men and three women. This is a stark contrast to the Greek athletic contests, where the audience would have been male only. Under the bleachers are three presumably lower-class young men, probably servants. I don't know about you, but I'm having flashbacks to high school here. Well, the mixed-gendered viewing and apparent class distinctions are interesting, but the key point, however, is that the seating area was a temporary setup, erected only for this set of games and then taken down afterwards. The importance of the sports in the Etruscan world is not reflected in permanent venues. Let me give some examples of the context for these sports with an emphasis on funerary games, that is, athletic events in honor of the recent dead, and then survey some of the principal sports themselves. Sports and games traditionally were held as part of major religious festivals. For the Etruscans, that of course meant the annual festival of Etruscan religious identity at Fanum Vultumni, the Etruscans' principal sanctuary, where they gathered to worship, conduct games, elect religious and political officials, and trade in a massive market. The origin of these games is lost in history. It seems to be contemporary with the founding of the Etruscan League of 12 Cities. The games continued to be held at least until the 4th century AD, when a decree from the Emperor Constantine I granted the Umbrians the same right to hold an annual event as had been held at Fanum Vultumni, including plays and gladiatorial combat. This 1,100-year tradition from about 700 BC to the 4th century AD gives us a sense of the significance of these games in the context of religious observances in the Etruscan world. We have even earlier testimony of what the games entailed, including in religious festivals, in a description of the games held by the first Etruscan king of Rome, Tarquinius Priscus. In about 600 BC, after achieving a military victory over the Latin people, the people surrounding Rome, Tarquinius celebrated with horse races and boxers imported for the occasion from Etruria. The 5th century BC Greek historian Herodotus tells us that after the Battle of Alalia in 535 BC, the Etruscan people of Treveteri observed religious rituals, including athletic and equestrian games, after taking into account a series of omens and the advice of the Pythia, the oracle of Apollo at Delphi. So at least two contexts for sport and spectacle that would be familiar in later Roman games, annual religious festivals, and military victory celebrations were already part of Etruscan culture. But the sports for which we have the best evidence are held in honor of the dead, funeral games. The Tomb of the Augurs at Tarquinia, dated to about 530 BC, provides one of the earliest Etruscan tomb paintings illustrating what would be a common motif in the medium, these funeral games. The large-scale fresco paintings on the interior of a single-chamber tomb take as their subjects the events of Etruscan funerary ritual. And as these are among the earliest and best preserved, I think they're worthy of our attention. On the back wall of the tomb, opposite the entrance, and so presented most centrally and prominently, is a painting that depicts two mourners flanking the doorway to the tomb itself. Each of the side walls is dominated with a large figural frieze in an outdoor setting, and on each one, the figures fall naturally into three groups. On the right-hand wall, the group at the far left end, that is closest to the interior of the tomb, consists of four figures, two adult men and two younger boys. The boys are servants or slaves. One carries a chair for one of the adult men, a magistrate. The other adult man performs a religious ritual, notably the augury, or interpretation of omens, examining the flights of birds to predict the future. The central group on the wall is a pair of wrestlers, nude in the manner of Greek athletes, showing the Etruscans' reliance on Greek models for their art. The figures participating in a Greek athletic contest are also drawn in Greek style with archaic proportions, notably the thick-set figures of Greek art from the Peloponnesus in southern Italy, with a mix of profile figures and frontal eyes. On the ground between the wrestlers rests a stack of three large metal cauldrons, the prize for this athletic contest. Now, most modern authors note the Greek style of the art and immediately make comparisons between this scene and the funeral games of Patroclus in Book 23 of the Iliad. That's a good parallel, but it's perhaps worth noting that cauldrons aren't one of the many prizes offered to the victors in any of those games, or anywhere else in Greek literature that I can find. But if we turn to Book 5 of the Roman poet Virgil's epic Aeneid, we read that a pair of bronze cauldrons were a prize in the funeral games held in honor of Anchises, father of Aeneas, the heroic Trojan refugee and subject of the poem who sailed to Italy to found Roman culture. I note this because as an Italian element, the illustrated stack of prize cauldrons provides critical evidence against the argument that Etruscans were just copying Greek imagery or practice. In fact, the cauldrons are evidence that they had their own traditions in these matters, as the next group of images on the wall shows us. The right-hand group on the right-hand wall is the most important in the tomb, and one of the most significant in all of Etruscan art. It consists of two men and a dog. First is a masked man in a costume, holding a red cord or a rope as a leash that's tied to a dog collar by way of a short piece of metal. When he pulls on the leash, the metal pivots and drives a sharp spike into the back of the dog's neck, understandably angering the dog, who then attacks the second man. And that's what the dog is doing in this painting. That second man is armed with a club and wears only a loincloth, but his head is covered with a bag. The success of the dog's attacks is seen from the blood that pours out of the wounds on the second man's legs. The dog, I should say, seems unscathed by this conflict. Some modern scholars equate this scene with human sacrifice. It's certainly related to the Etruscan practice of sacrifice, but I think that the goal here is not just the death of the man with the club. It's pretty clearly a blood sacrifice. His blood must flow into the ground as an offering to the recently deceased. The man with the club might die or he might not, but his death is optional. What's necessary is that he bleed freely in honor of the dead. This is the earliest visual evidence of the origins of gladiatorial combat in the blood sacrifices of Etruscan funeral games. That connection between funeral games and gladiatorial combat would be retained for another 400 years until gladiators finally fought in non-funerary contexts. On the left-hand wall, the central group is a pair of boxers facing the wrestlers on the wall opposite. Resting on the ground in between the boxers' legs are two more large vessels, which I conclude were also prizes for the winner of that sport in the funeral games. So the Tomb of the Augurs gives us great evidence of the rituals and associated games, in this case, boxing, wrestling, and a man versus dog fight, of funerary rites. At this point, it might be helpful to survey the sports by type rather than just discuss specific examples. Equestrian sports seem to have especially captivated the Etruscans. While the elites used chariots as markers of aristocratic status, sponsoring chariot races was another sort of outlet for elite display, particularly in the context of funeral games. We have tomb remains of a number of chariots, as well as paintings of four and two-horse chariot races primarily. As I suggested with the wrestlers in the Tomb of the Augurs, the evidence for chariot racing also indicates that the Etruscans were not just copying Greek practice. Their chariots are larger and more elaborately decorated wooden vehicles covered with bronze sheets that were engraved or otherwise carefully worked. The Etruscan charioteers differ in dress and equipment from the Greeks, for example, often tying the reins around their waists rather than just holding them in their hands, a system later adopted by the Romans. Another Etruscan peculiarity was the triga, a three-horse chariot team, an arrangement never used by the Greeks, but popular in Etruria, especially at Cusae, where half of the images of chariot racing, recovered from the Archaic period, that is 600 to 480 BC, show the triga. The Etruscans brought the triga to Rome, where three-horse chariot races were held in the Campus Martius, a big field along the banks of the Tiber. We know the name of only one Etruscan charioteer, Ratumena, whose team, after winning a race, were spooked, throwing him to his death. The team then bolted, stopping, the story goes, only when they reached the terracotta statue of Jupiter on the Capitoline Hill. Both Ratumena and Volca, who sculpted the statue of Jupiter, were from Veii. But I can't honestly say what this story means beyond that. Maybe that even wild horses recognize the power of Jupiter. Well, horse races were also a common element of Etruscan religious festivals. The horse race plaques from the aristocratic dwelling at Merlo from about 580 BC show three bareback riders on horses riding to the right, away from a feature that shares attributes of a turning post, as seen in chariot racing imagery. The top of the feature is a cauldron, a large vessel of the type also seen as a prize for the boxers and wrestlers in the later Tomb of the Augur. These riders are apparently galloping their horses. The riders' tunics are pushed back, flowing behind them, in an evocative detail of their speed. Each rider holds the reins in his right hand and a stick as a riding crop in his left hand. The bareback races never caught on in Rome, but they're still found today in Etruria, modern Tuscany, where the Palio at Siena, an annual bareback horse race, draws huge crowds and is an important event in the annual civic calendar. Perhaps not as prestigious as the equestrian events, but probably more numerous, were the athletic contests. The majority of these consisted of what today we'd call track and field, real Olympic events, that is, events that were held at the ancient Olympics. Many of these have a military origin or application, which is at least partly responsible for the male-only participation. They also share the characteristics of having neither judges nor scorekeepers. The winners were clear. Foot races were popular. These included the usual sort, where runners wore only a loincloth, as well as armored races, where the contestants competed in full armor. The lack of purely nude events in Etruscan athletics sets them apart from Greek competitions. Long jumping was another common athletic contest held by the Etruscans and familiar to us. The Etruscan jumpers carried hand weights, however. These stone or lead weights apparently were thrust forward at the moment of jumping to increase momentum and jump distance. The classic throwing things category was filled by shot put, javelin, and discus contests. Again, all familiar, except that the Etruscans threw the javelin with a strap that gave the throw additional leverage, speed, distance, and accuracy. Now, I've already mentioned the agonistic sports of boxing and wrestling, but they deserve a bit more detailed discussion. Wrestling seems pretty straightforward, except for the predilection of Etruscan artists to illustrate matches with one wrestler picking the other one up over his head and throwing him. It seems a bit more pro-wrestling than sumo, at least in that regard. Boxing, however, was more popular and important, especially for funeral games. Popular, I judge, by the sheer number of representations, especially tomb paintings that survive. Important because, unlike wrestling, well, usually, boxing was a blood sport. And the images on tombs make the shedding of blood very, very prominent. I think boxing, like the dogfight discussed earlier, was favored in funeral games for the blood that flowed down to the deceased who was being honored. Another aspect of Etruscan boxing that sets it apart from the Greek version was the regular inclusion of a flute player during the match. Ancient Greek authors sneer at this as another example of Etruscan softness and luxury. The Etruscans themselves don't say why they boxed that way with a flute player in the background, but there are a few possibilities. First, music has a tendency to stir the blood during exercise. Thai boxing, even today, traditionally features music. Secondly, the flute player is of the same type seen in other religious ceremonies, such as sacrifices, so that his presence and playing reinforced the sacred nature of the undertaking. Remember, all of these contests are components of religious rituals. You might be saying by now, this is all fine for sports, but what about the spectacles? Good question. We'd better get to that. While we've got the blood sports in mind, I wanted to point out that that dog versus man fight I discussed earlier from the Tomb of the Augurs is not unique. There's an almost identical scene in the Tomb of the Olympic Games, also from Tarquinia. This reinforces the idea that the contest, like boxing, was conducted, at least in part, for the bloodshed, if not the inevitable death of the man armed with the club. If the goal was just to kill him, why arm him? I think the arming was a nod to the entertainment aspect as well. This is spectacle, as in spectacular entertainment, and the needs of the audience to see the struggle, not just blood and death, were filled by arming the blood victim. This raises the broader question of who is in the audience versus who is performing the sports or spectacle. In the Greek world, athletics were personal contests undertaken by elite males to celebrate their individual greatness to a stadium full of other elite males. In the Etruscan world, once again, we see a stark difference. Specifically, athletics were undertaken by other than elites. In some instances, they seemed to be slaves. That's clear from the names painted next to athletes in Etruscan tombs. They all have a single name, a sign of servile status. Some were professional performers, such as the horseback riders who did trick riding, leaping off and back on horses as they raced. That seems unlikely to be a successful amateur event. Others, notably the blood sacrifices, were slaves who were probably purchased just for this reason. So these were all spectator sports, as they were shortly later for the Romans. And in many ways, they were the antithesis of the Greek tradition. Because of the Etruscan expansion out of Etruria, the Etruscan heartland, additional evidence of these games comes from the region they colonized in southern Italy, which also provides a superb case study in the transmission of these athletic traditions to other people in ancient Italy, including the Romans. The Greek colony of Posidonia was directly across the Sele River from Etruscan territory, and ideas and influences flowed back and forth between the two people. Like many of the communities along the west coast of Italy, including Pompeii, Posidonia was overrun in the late 5th century BC by incursions of invading people from the center of Italy. In the case of Posidonia, the Lucanians occupied the city starting about 425 BC and brought their own culture to dominate, as well as absorb the Greek and Etruscan influences that were already there. From this point on, we refer to the city by its Roman name, Paestum. The extent of cultural change that occurred is reflected in a quote on the loss from a Greek author, Aristoxenos, in his work, Promiscuous Banquets. He says, "We act in a manner similar to the people of Paestum, who dwell in the Tyrrhenian Gulf, for it happened to them, though they were originally Greeks, to have become at last completely barbarized, becoming Tyrrhenians, Etruscans, and to have changed their language, all the rest of their national habits. But one Greek festival they do celebrate, even to the present day, 3rd century AD, in which they meet and recollect all of their ancient names and customs, and bewail their loss to one another. And then, when they have wept for them, they go home. Well, note that Aristoxenos concluded that the Greeks of the colony became culturally Etruscan, not Lucanian, the culture of their actual occupiers. In the immediate aftermath of the Lucanian occupation of Paestum, we might expect more Greek influence to remain, but it's the Etruscan that predominates. Looking at the Lucanian tomb paintings, we can see clear evidence of Etruscan influence. The Lucanian tombs differ from the Greek in shape, though they're all underground tombs. They consist of four slabs of local limestone used for tomb walls, but the short ends are topped with triangular tops to hold a pair of roof slabs that make up a standard sort of gabled roof. Like Etruscan tombs, they're built to represent houses. Their paintings also differ in subject from the Greek ones. The most revealing subjects in the Lucanian tomb paintings are funerary rituals, notably funeral games of Etruscan type, including the earliest images in art of gladiatorial combat. Lucanian tomb paintings with human figures are found dating to 390 BC, with the earliest images of funerary ritual among the paintings dated to 380 BC. This demonstrates the key role funerary ritual played in celebrating the lives of the deceased and the piety of their survivors in preparing an appropriately elaborate tomb. The wall paintings from one of these tombs, dated to about 370 BC, preserve images of funerary games in three pairs of figures on two walls. On one wall, a pair of charioteers drives two horse chariots past a column, which is apparently being used as a turning post. On the other wall, a column separates the two scenes of different events. On the left, a pair of boxers pummels one another until blood flows freely to the accompaniment of a flute player. On the right, a pair of gladiators, armored with helmets and greaves and armed with spear and shield, also fight until blood flows freely. They're watched by a supervising official. The emphasis on blood flow is significant and sets these apart from the athletic contests known from Greek funeral games, where blood flow was not the object of the competition. In the Etruscan tradition, the blood seems to be a sacrifice to the dead over whose tomb they might have fought, so that the blood soaked into the ground above the deceased. This was perhaps as a sacrifice to the gods of the dead or those demons who guarded the route to the afterlife, easing the passage of the deceased. These scenes likely do not illustrate the actual games for this individual. Rather, they represent the idealized version. They operate as a sort of promise to the deceased, witnessed by those attending the funeral and standing around the open tomb into which the deceased and their grave goods were deposited. The inclusion of blood sports accompanied by flute players, along with chariot racing, demonstrates the Etruscan influence bemoaned by Aristoxenos in the passage I just quoted. It also provides what's probably the conduit for these games to flow into Rome. Although chariot racing and athletic events were brought to Rome directly by the Etruscans in the 7th century BC, it was only with the Roman conquest of southern Etruscan territory in the 4th and 3rd centuries BC that they encountered these funeral games. Shortly afterwards, gladiatorial bouts become a notable and eventually iconic element in Roman funeral rites, as they continued to be from the 3rd century BC to the 4th century AD.